I tapped into a few people who were doing some sort of alternative healthcare kind of practices. And everybody I talked to there and in this yoga class I was in, we were all going, I wish there was like a group of women that we could just get together with and talk about stuff that's important. And I was like, yeah, that would be great. You should do that, And finally I realized nobody was gonna do it. So it was another one of those moments where it was like, I need this. I'm sure other people need it. I've been told other people need it. I'm just going to do what I can to see what happens.
You're listening to the Woman of Value podcast. You are about to hear the story of a woman who is following her dreams and passions and creating positive change in the world.
Lauren's passion is to help women recognize and unleash their innate and experiential wisdom, both emotional, physical, and spiritual, so they can bring that wisdom consciously into their lives with confidence and joy. She does this through her Heartlight Wellness, and that is where she provides intuitive healing and transformation mentoring, and through Wise Women Circles, and through her podcast, the Curiously Wise Podcast. Welcome to the show, Lauren.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me here.
My pleasure. So we always start with, what does woman of value mean to you?
A woman who embraces her personal power, her voice, her intellect, her wisdom, and brings it out into the world. It's great if you have all that for yourself, but if you don't share it with the world, then you're being, in my opinion, you're being a little stingy with your gifts. And so that value comes in for me in the stepping out, being visible, which is hard for some of us to do. But yeah, that's when your value really shines.
Yeah, I love that. And so I'm just curious, were you that woman at one point in your life?
I've had to be that woman in several places in my life where I didn't want to be. I resisted and wasn't given much choice. Now I am that woman. That's just me. I love to bring everything that I do out into the world. And I'm finding more and more ways to do that. So that's great.
When you say you had been that woman in other places where you didn't want to be, like where you were forced to be visible when you wanted to be a little more invisible, is that what you
mean? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I grew up in a family where there was a lot of dysfunction. My dad was an alcoholic. My mom was a narcissist. It made for a very bombastic environment. My brother and I were pretty lucky that we were introverts while our parents were uber extroverts, because we would go hide in our rooms and that was fine. We were great with that, you know, out of the line of fire, so to speak. I was never physically harmed, but there was a lot of emotional kind of abuse going on. So being invisible was safe and speaking out was never a good idea. So I became an anxious pleaser and really did everything I could to keep the peace in the family. I was one of the peacekeeper, you know, took on the peacekeeper role. And so when I was about, I think I was 19, my parents finally separated. It was very traumatic to me in spite of the problems between them, because I had been assured that as long as they were fighting, everything was okay, which is kind of an interesting family dynamic. So it was kind of blindsided me. And I ended up taking a semester off from college and going to California and living with a boyfriend for a while and just kind of getting away from all of the trauma and the drama of my parents. And then I came home because I had to go back to school the following semester, and I kind of fell apart. I was depressed. I was sad. It still gets me. I still feel it now that I'm talking about it, but I was pretty lost. I didn't know what to do or how to be now that everything had changed in my family. And I was very fortunate I went to Brown University, and there was in my mailbox there one day was a flyer for a group that one of the deans was running for the children of alcoholics. And this was before Al-Anon was, Al-Anon was around, but I'd never heard of it. The adult children of alcoholics movement, I think was not, I wasn't aware of it at the time at any rate. And I was 20 at the time. It was a community of people like me who had grown up in families like mine. And I had never met anybody that openly admitted that before. So it was an eye-opening moment. It was a huge growth moment. I felt like I'd found my tribe. I learned a lot about alcoholism and the whole mechanism of that in the family. And I told my mom about it. And then she and my brother is 8 years older than me. And I was told that we needed to get dad into rehab. My parents were separated, but not unmarried yet. We needed to get him into rehab. He'd had heart attacks, multiple heart attacks by this point, was a massive smoker. He was trying to kill himself basically the slowest way possible. And I was assigned the job of telling him that we needed him to go to rehab, which in Alcoholics Anonymous is called 12th stepping somebody. You know, you have to admit you've got a problem and we're going to help you with it. My mom was taking care of the insurance. My brother found a place for him to go. I was the one at 21 years old who had to face my father, who when he was not drinking was a sweetheart. I loved him dearly, but when he was drinking, he was loud and scary and he's a big guy. So I resisted as long as they would allow me to, which was about an hour and a half, as I recall. And then I called my dad and said, I need to have, let's have lunch. I need to talk to you. I had never done anything like that on purpose before. We went to one of our favorite restaurants. We lived in Washington, D.C. There was lots of great places. So I picked what I knew was one of his favorites. And I also knew it was small. It was safe. And so we meet there and I walk in and they give us the table that is by the front door next to the bar. It's the only table in that area. I had never seen it before. And I almost turned around and walked out the door because I'm thinking, I can't do this in public like this. I just can't do it. But I realized I had screwed up my courage. I had primed the pump with dad that I needed to talk to him. And I sat down and I burst into tears. And then I told him what I had to tell him, which was, we love you. We don't want you to kill yourself with, you know, drink with alcohol. We would like you to get some help. We figure out how to do that, you know, where to take you. It was totally from the heart. I still get teary about it. And he said, okay. It was not what I expected. I expected him to, you know, get up and storm out of the restaurant or yell at me or something. And it was a real eye-opening experience for me to speak from the heart like that and have that kind of reaction. So that was the first time I ever really had to step up and go, okay, I can do this. I know what I'm talking about. I have done the work on myself. I have, you know, arranged it so that I feel safe. It was an eye-opening. It was a life-changing experience for both of us because he ended up being sober for 20 years before he died. But it took that community at school to help me understand what was going on, to help me screw up my courage and to know what to say. And it's brought community into my life in an important way. So that was sort of my first time where I had to own my value. I was worth not suffering because of my dad's alcoholism.
Wow.
And that was the steps I had to take to do that.
Yeah. And in many ways, I mean, I don't know if we call that parentifying, but in many ways, I think it is, because you were put in a role that was really what your mom should have done, where, you know. And at the same time, right? But at the same time, this gave you a tremendous amount of courage to keep doing things like this in your life and to see the impact it had. And what I'm hearing is that it wasn't just that you stepped into this role and it was a scary role. You also really prepared for it. You really spoke from your heart in a loving way. It was not in a way that was like, we think you're totally messed up, dad.
And no. Yeah.
Right.
We want to keep you here.
Yeah. We want to keep you here. We love you. We don't want you to die. Mm-hmm. And you saw him doing all these self-destructive things, and to be able to say that and do that at such a young age, and to have him actually take the step get himself into rehab and to get sober. I mean, that's really amazing.
It was. I mean, it changed all of our lives, but his the most, you know, so it's, And it's been, I find that a lot of the people that I work with have either alcoholism in their background that they're still processing and need help through the healing work I do, or they have a narcissistic parent, or they have both, So I have a lot of experience with both of those. Because another time I had to really step up into my value was my mom was in the last couple of years of her life. She had dementia and she ended up with cancer. And I had to really deal with a lot of my own shit first, if you excuse the word, to be there in grace for her in the last few months of her life. And that was another time where it was like, okay, I can do this. I'm strong enough. She needs me, you know, I can step up and do this. And it was another life-changing experience for me to be able to step into that. It's kind of a confidence, you know, that I can do this. I don't want to do it necessarily, but I am strong enough. I'm smart enough. I'm wise enough that I can do this. So that's where I get a lot of my value from, is bringing those things out for other people, sharing it.
Yeah. So having had tough experiences, learning from them, and then being able to offer that to help others.
It's that bringing it out into the world. Mm-hmm. I think we have a lot of wisdom, especially I'm in my early 60s now, and I really feel like I've kind of come into my wisdom in the last decade or so. And I miss that my elders are already gone, when I would really appreciate having them around to share their wisdom with me. I was, mm-hmm. Young. I don't need to know that. That's old. So I really love the idea of being present for especially the generations coming along behind me to share the wisdom that I have, maybe make the way a little easier for others.
Yeah. And growing up with two parents who really couldn't be there for you in mm-hmm. various ways is tough. I can relate to that. My father was bipolar, and not just bipolar, but definitely personality disorder. I mean, mm-hmm. not sure all of the diagnoses, right. But he was not easy to have as a father. Very mm-hmm. narrow-minded, didn't really understand me. My mother understood me more, but when you have had a tough beginning, and knowing that you can learn from these experiences, you can overcome some of your own triggers, your own tendencies, because, you know, believing in change, believing in growth for all people. And look at your father. I mean, he's the perfect example of somebody who people had given up on, and you didn't. Yeah. How have you dealt with like the triggers or the things that were missing for you in your earlier years?
Well, a lot of my triggers, like I said, was around, hiding, not being a target. I didn't deal well with anger, because in my family, you never knew if it was going to be a little irritation or a full out, yell fest. And so, I mean, I really learned to not put myself first and to, make other people comfortable first, so that they wouldn't, they wouldn't trigger me in some other way. And I've really learned, really just in the last couple of years, I think I've finally started to be able to have the perspective to learn that I'm not responsible for other people's emotional reactions. I'm responsible for mine, and I don't like to hurt people. So I'm not like trying to, goad them into reacting, but I can't help it if what I am doing for me, owning myself and my own needs, which for women is really not easy to do a lot of our lives. I have to be okay if that bothers them. I have to be okay if that makes them angry or irritated at me. And I have to be okay if, they're having to figure out why am I changing? Because I've been a people pleaser, for decades and decades at this point. And to begin to really step back and go, okay, am I doing this because I don't want them to react in some way? I'm avoiding something? Or am I doing this for them because it's out of love and I want to do something nice for them, and that kind of thing? So I'm really reevaluating relationships. I have the perspective now of these stories of, dealing with parents and the amazingly strong woman I've become because of all the different things that have happened in my life. I'm not letting them trigger me if they get angry because I'm not doing something the way I used to, or I'm doing something different than I used to. And I'm doing a lot of things different than I used to.
That's good.
So for me, it's that perspective that really has helped me to recognize when I'm triggered really fast, instead of being triggered, going into whatever, and, and the scripts in my head about, whatever. That ugly voice that we all have in our head, mm-hmm. you did something wrong, or, you just weren't nice enough, whatever. But I have the perspective to see it faster. Oh, that triggered me, to step back a little bit and go, okay, what story is that triggering? Do I need to keep up with that story, or can I choose a different way? And I've gotten where I can do this pretty fast. Used to be, it would take me days to get out of the emotional thing and go, wait a minute, So it's, you know, with practice, because mm-hmm. life brings us lots of practice. That perspective is something I really value, that looking back on all the trials and tribulations that we all have in our lives. And honestly, I have to say, I have a very good life. And after my dad stopped drinking, it was pretty mild compared to anything it had been before. But it's that perspective that I really value, because at 30, you don't have the perspective you have at 60. You mm-hmm. just don't have it. And that's why I wish my elders were around, because they'd have so much more perspective than I do. And I think it's really a superpower that, you know, when we can recognize things that trigger us, step out of that just enough to go, wait a minute, what's going on? And have the perspective to go, I don't need to react that way anymore.
Yeah.
And then to choose, how do I want to react? Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to say, I don't like it when you talk to me that way. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I can say, I'm sorry if this is bothering you, but it's important to me. It's an ongoing lesson for me.
Yeah. I mean, for all of us, I think it's, mm-hmm. it's not like you fix it and forget it. It's we're dealing with lifetime of stuff that, I mean, in your life in particular, you were hiding from conflict, you know, yes. for most of your life. And so conflict represented a lack of safety. And yes. for people who grow up in an environment where conflict is done well, where it's done respectfully, which is mm-hmm. what we really want to have modeled for us,
right.
then conflict isn't scary, and we don't avoid it, and we don't become people pleasers to avoid it. And mm-hmm. so that's been a big part of my practice as well, because I also grew up in a very loudly screaming home where nobody knew how to really talk kindly to each other. There was a lot of mm-hmm. finger pointing and accusations. And I knew in my gut, this is not how I want to continue my life. Mm-hmm. I just didn't really have the formula for it until much later, but I teach it now. It's one of the things I love teaching the most, are communication skills and boundaries. And we just launched boundaryuniversity.com, because I co-lead courses with another woman, and we created so many different ways to join this boundary stuff, because some people need a full program and some people just need how to deal with codependency and people pleasing. Mm-hmm. And so it's, now you can pick and choose what you want to do. And it's just super important. I mean, I think so many people think, well, if I grew up in this home, this is just the way it is, and I'm kind of doomed. And then you continue to bring this trauma from generation to generation, and you can stop it. It's such an incredible gift.
Yeah, it is. And I find things that are take effort to learn are the things I can teach the best. Mm-hmm. Because you've had to figure it out. And things I do intuitively, I have a hard time teaching anybody how to do that, because I don't know how I do it. You know, I love to create communities of women. Because that first community that I was in college was predominantly women. And it was so nurturing, so affirming, so illuminating, that this wasn't the normal way that families should work. Because when you're in it, you don't know it's not normal. Mm-hmm. You know it's awful, but you don't know it's not normal. And so one of the wonderful things my husband did for me earlier, most of the first 5 or 6 years of our marriage, he grew up in what we call a Leave It to Beaver family. I used to be able to ask him, is that normal? Something would happen. I go, is that normal? And he could validate for me, yes, it is, or no, it's not. I had no clue. Mm-hmm. So places like this Boundary University sounds wonderful, because you'll get that. Is that normal? How can, you know, what tools can I have to work with this? And to bring it to wherever I need it to be. That's great. I love that. I'm going to have to go check it out.
Yeah, do. We have a free 5-day series for anybody who wants to just get introduced to Boundary University. It's a video series. Nice. So people can log in there and just click on the link.
That is so needed too. That's one of the first things I had to learn for my own sanity. And it's something my clients all have trouble with.
Yeah, mine too. And it's what they come for help for with, because it is so crucial to having healthy relationships.
Yeah.
If you have ever played small to make other people feel comfortable, or maybe stayed in a bad relationship or job too long because you didn't think you could do any better, I wrote a book for you. It's called Becoming a Woman of Value: How to Thrive in Life and Love. Each of the 30 chapters contains a life lesson, a story, and an exercise to bring you closer to reaching your full potential. Becoming a Woman of Value is available on Amazon in paperback and Kindle.
So you were saying that you love to create communities, and you have you have a community that you call Wise Women Circle.
The Wise Women Circle. Yeah, it's actually kind of been on hiatus during the pandemic. I am waiting for the universe to tell me it's time to bring it back. I'm getting a lot of messages from the members of that community. When are we going to get back together? I was in need of community. I live in Williamsburg, Virginia. It's a fairly conservative small town, a beautiful place to raise your children. We live in a gorgeous neighborhood and have great neighbors and all that stuff. But I didn't really, hadn't found my tribe here. I hadn't found friends that I could have deep conversations with. I hadn't, you know, hadn't found those kinds of relationships. Thank goodness for technology, because, you know, I had those people in other places. So I was able to do that. But as I began to become to explore being a healer, I tapped into a few people who were doing some sort of alternative healthcare kind of practices. And everybody I talked to there and in this yoga class I was in, we were all going, I wish there was like a group of women that we could just get together with and talk about stuff that's important. And I was like, yeah, that would be great. You should do that. And finally I realized nobody was going to do it. So it was another one of those moments where it was like, I need this. I'm sure other people need it. I've been told other people need it. I'm just going to do what I can to see what happens. And I asked those people that I knew if they would invite people to this first gathering. One of them offered her office space because she had a big room that we could, you know, meet in. And we just kind of put the word out to people we knew, which wasn't very many people on my part, but they had better contacts. And we had 12 people show up at the first gathering.
Wow.
And it grew over the next few months. I had 25 people show up one time, which was a little too much to manage properly. I have 40 women on the mailing list for it, but we would gather every, twice a month. I had a whole, just a sort of a layout, kind of like you do with a podcast where you know, we're going to talk about these things in this order. But I was going through a lot with my mom at the time and I needed to talk about it. So since I started the group and I was facilitating the group, I think of it as seeding the group. I got to choose what we were going to talk about every week or every 2 weeks. And so I would come in and go, I need to talk about boundaries. So tell me what you know about boundaries. And everybody would take a turn if they wanted to. Some people didn't like talking. They just wanted to listen. That was fine. And I learned so much from these women. And I got addicted to this group. And I think everybody else did too, because we had a core group of about 15 people that were there almost all the time. We would talk about sort of whatever was coming up that moment for me, but inevitably it tapped into what other women needed to talk about too. And people would say to me, this is so weird. This is exactly what I needed to talk about tonight. You know? I get divinely inspired, you know, for a lot of that. So it became a real community, and it still is, in spite of the fact that most of us haven't seen each other in 2 years. And I started a second one. It didn't take off quite as much, but those people have joined the original circle too. So it's a big community. We were all surprised at how many like-minded people, I would say, like-minded women were here in Williamsburg, which all of us think of as a kind of, you know, conservative retiree town, but there's all of these amazing women doing all these amazing things to help other people, you know? Mm. And so I have started a podcast in April. I started a podcast Curiously Wise because I was missing those conversations. And I have met the most amazing women, and I see it as a network that I don't know what we're going to do together, but I see this network of amazing women around the world connecting through my podcast. And I'm in the dreaming stage. What can we do together? And I just realized that I love community. I love communities, particularly of women, because we don't get quiet when we don't have men around. We'll say what we need to say. I always made sure it was a safe space to speak. I was always very vulnerable, which I didn't know that's what I was being. But several people pretty much a couple of people every time would come up and say, thank you so much for being vulnerable. It helped me to feel safe doing that too. And so I've discovered that's one of my gifts. It's one of those things I don't have a lot of choice about because my emotions are just, right there. But it was really humbling to me to know that just allowing myself to cry in public or allowing myself to go, I'm having this issue with my mom and it's driving me crazy, in spite of the fact that she's got dementia and cancer and I love her and I help her. Being able to air those things in a safe place where you knew people were going to support you. And we had someone who lost a spouse and we were all there for her. We had people who were having children with major health issues. And we were all there for them. Even if it was just to say, we're holding you in the light, it's powerful. And it's the way women have traditionally spent time together. You think of a sewing bee, a quilting bee, or a barn raising where the women all get together and do the food. And they're all talking like this together all the time without the guys around, Yeah. And, I find it so enlivening and uplifting. And obviously I get very excited about it because it's just more fun than I ever thought I'd be able to have.
Yeah. It sounds amazing. You just reminded me of, I used to work in summer camps when my kids were camp age and we'd go to these sleepaway camps. And at one of them, one of my closest friends was a quilter and she worked at the camp and she and her sister were quilters and I was an artist and I ran the art department and the ceramics department and the woodshop department and all the different things. And so we would create projects. And I remember one summer I was working on a mosaic table while they were working on quilts. And I used to give them quilting advice because I was good at the colors and the patterns figuring out what went together. And it was just so much fun because we'd just be down there for hours doing all this crafts. But it's an environment also where people talk. And I've also taught art to high school kids where I brought coaching into the art room. Mm. And to me, like the best way to talk is to be involved in a project and be in that zone. And I found in doing that where people would come to the class and talk about their father's doesn't have any boundaries post-divorce. Mm-hmm. And he's telling her too many things about his dating life or his ex-wife mm-hmm. or their mother. And another kid said, oh, I can relate to that. My father also violates boundaries. And then another kid is like, well, I have anxiety because mm-hmm. my parents are putting pressure on me. And then somebody else can relate to that. So when people share, we find ourselves in the sharing. It's not in that perfection, which is what so many of us are growing up with, this need to be perfect, this need to compare and despair. And I love community too. I totally can relate to everything you're saying.
Yeah. It's powerful. And it's something that we are so fiercely independent in this US culture that we kind of lost in a lot of ways. So yeah. I love being able to bring back that sense of supportive community where you're safe to say what you need to say.
That's beautiful. Let's talk a little bit about the future. You said you're excited to bring the Wise Woman Circles back in person. Mm-hmm. What else is on the dock for you for the future?
A friend of mine and I are collaborating together to put together an anthology, all women writers who will be hopefully, literally, we've just brainstormed this morning, will be writing about the divine feminine in their lives. And it's going to be called The Wisdom of Women. I'm sorry, A Wisdom of Women. So I looked up, I love collective nouns, like An Exaltation of Larks is one of my favorites, A Murder of Crows. So I looked up the plural noun for women, and it's either a bevy, which is a beautiful collection of women, or it's a gaggle, which is a noisy talking group of women. And I don't like either of those because I don't think they're meant in a really, good way as far as our self-worth goes. So I thought we should have a wisdom of women. And so that's going to be the title of the anthology, A Wisdom of Women. And then we'll be inviting 13 total writers who are collected from my friend's life. She's got, she studied at Chartres Cathedral for 7 summers in the mystery school. So she's got all kinds of interesting people. I've met so many people on my podcast, in addition to my Wise Women Circle, that we're going to pull 13 of those together and do an anthology, connecting these women in a new way and bringing their wisdom out into the world in a way that's wonderful. I've written 6 novels So I know the book business. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I can see.
It's a brand new thing here.
Well, let's go into the lightning round. Are you ready?
Okay.
All right. The first one is fill in the blank. I used to think I wasn't blank enough.
I used to think I wasn't smart enough. And I was a smart kid. I skipped a grade. Uh-huh. You know, I did all kinds of things, but I used to think I wasn't smart enough.
So what led to that belief?
I think that one definitely comes from my mother. She had to be the smartest person in the room. And so there was a lot of I would excel at something and she would immediately undercut it. Mm. I would win a prize. She said, you should have let the poor kid in your class have it. You know, that kind of thing. A's were, you know, well, you know, of course you got A's. You're my daughter. You wouldn't not get A's.
You know? Right. You take after me.
How can I turn it around?
It's right.
So I think there was a lot of insecurity around my intellect because I didn't know who to believe. You know, was it my teachers and my grades or was it my mother? Because you tend to want to believe your mother. Uh-huh. So I think that's where it came from. And I have struggled to own that as an adult. So.
Yeah. Crazy saboteurs that live within us. Yes.
Yeah.
So the next question is, what was the number one thing holding you back from becoming a woman of value?
It was a fear of being a target, you know, fear of anger, fear of conflict. Mm. So I've had to make peace with that. Learn that all conflict and all anger is not bad. Mm-hmm. It's a function of change. Writing novels helped me with that because you have to have conflict in your stories.
Yeah, otherwise they're boring.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, conflict is not bad. It's how we deal with it. Mm-hmm. And if we avoid conflict, we're actually avoiding intimacy. And it's mm-hmm. something I did not realize until much later in life because conflict felt scary. If you do it wrong, if you do it in a violent way, it is scary.
Yeah.
That's not just conflict. That's violence.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
What is the best advice you can give to a woman who wants to become more empowered?
I would encourage her to spend time alone in the quiet. And for me, that was meditation because it allowed me to really hear those inner voices. And if you're not aware of them, you can't challenge them. And so that for me was the first step in owning my value, is understanding the inner voice that was happening, that was holding me back, that fear of conflict, which I hadn't really brought it out where I could go, oh, this is conflict. That's why I'm feeling uncomfortable. Keeping in mind, I'm an introvert. I like being alone, you know? But that going inside in a way that was very quiet. And it took me a long time to actually get, you know, where I could get quiet. So it's practice and journaling. It's the same kind of thing. I journaled a lot in those conflict years, get it out of my head and onto paper so I could see what I was feeling.
Yeah. So many people don't get quiet, especially mm-hmm. today with our phones always being on and mm-hmm. devices being on. And it's scary for people to be quiet with themselves. Yeah. And when you get quiet, you do have the most amazing ideas. You come up with what's really true. I mean, Boundary University came from a quiet moment in mm-hmm. the shower. You know,
that's one of my favorite brainstorming places.
Right, those shower moments.
Uh-huh. And then I need a waterproof notepad.
Yeah, they have those. Go on Amazon. They do have those for people who have shower thoughts. Okay. So Lauren, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Life is wonderful, but you have to be in it. Don't hide.
Good advice. And what is something that people often get wrong about you?
A lot of people think I'm inarticulate, and I know why. It's because I have a hard time putting my thoughts and feelings into verbal words. I can write them down, but saying them, I get tongue-tied or I trip over words. And so I think a lot of people think I'm inarticulate.
Right. So you have the thoughts and you have the words, but they come out better on paper.
They come out better on paper. I'm more of a feeling, like I'll get a feeling about something mm-hmm. and you try to describe that feeling to somebody. It's all metaphors and symbols. No, it's not linear language. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a linear thinker. So that's where I think some of it comes into. My friends who are engineers by education have a hard time having conversations with me sometimes.
And I have trouble talking to linear people. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't understand them. I just find them to be limiting. And mm-hmm. I like expansive thought. I like to be able to have thoughts out in different directions.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Yeah, I'm also highly intuitive. And it is, I think people really do process differently. Mm-hmm. And we can be feelers, we can be thinkers, we can be doers. I always ask a client when I first start working with them, how do you learn best? Are you kinesthetic? Are you visual? Are you auditory? Because I'm going to give them homework based on how they learn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's important. I don't think our schools do that well enough.
Oh, no. You have to fit in the box. And mm-hmm. if you do not, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
All my kids were out of the box, shockingly. Mm-hmm. And
mine too.
Yeah. Surprise. I mean, my ex-husband is a comedian and puppeteer and has dyslexia, and he's totally mm-hmm. not in the box. And so I didn't expect any of my kids to be doctors or lawyers or mm-hmm. anything like in the box. But I would struggle with teachers who would try to put them in a box and then mm-hmm. wonder, why does your child shut down when he's wrong in class? And I said, well, what makes him wrong? And this was an English teacher in high school. And she said, well, when he doesn't give me the answer I'm looking for. I said, oh, well, how about you entertain the answer he's giving, and maybe for the test, ask him to, you know, give the answer of the classics or whatever it is that you're mm-hmm. looking for. But he's a really smart kid. And if you listen to him, you might learn something.
It's like, yeah. Yeah. I got two of them like that.
Yeah. It's just like school isn't always the best place for kids who are out of the box. So finally, Lauren, how would you like to be remembered?
I would like to be remembered for always bringing joy into the room. Joy and wisdom. Those are like my two pillars of my life right now.
They're both really important. Well, Lauren, this has just been a treat, getting to know you, getting to hear who you've become through the work that you've done, how you're influencing other people, and what you're bringing to the world. So thank you for this conversation.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. This is so much fun. I love having these kinds of conversations.
Me too. Let our audience know the best way to reach you.
The best way is my website. It's heartlightjoy.com. And I'm on socials and stuff, but everything's connected there. And if you sign up for my newsletter, I do offer a free download of my top three ways to communicate with your guides, with your spirit guides. If you're interested in that, I'd love to have you on my newsletter.
Okay. Thank you so much, Lauren.
Yeah, thank you.
And thanks everybody for listening. If you love our show, please give us a high rating on Apple Podcasts. It helps more people find the Woman of Value podcast. Have a wonderful day.
If you would like to step more fully into your value, grab a free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Becoming a Woman of Value on my website, thewomanofvalue.com. Just click the link at the top of the homepage. And if you haven't already done so, be sure to click the subscribe button in your listening app. And if there's something in this episode that inspired you, please share it with others, because the more we share these inspirational stories, the more women of value we will have in this world. I'll see you next time.